from Quite the Thing Media.
This is Kevin from the Jury Room Podcast. Thank you for joining Jeff, aka Podcast Father, on this journey. Sharing great things content creators are doing, the must not, giving interviews from people all across the industry. He is the Indie Podcaster.
You've been searching for a podcast. Want to know about some great artists? Yeah. You've come to the right place. Indie Podcaster, with your host, the Podcast Father.
Here we are, another day, another episode of Indie Podcaster. I'm your host, Jeff, aka Podcast Father. I've still got my good friend, Ed Havens, from the Film Jerk Podcast, hanging out with me, helping me out with these intros. What's up, Ed?
Just hanging out with you, doing these intros.
You got it, man. You're that good, man. You got a sense of humor that everybody could love. No, but all jokes aside, you have a podcast that everybody should check out. I will give you a second to talk about it. That's the least I can do.
The Film Jerk Podcast is, as I like to call it, a uniquely curated journey through 1980s cinema. I prefer to spend more time with the films that aren't as remembered or beloved as most of the movies that do get regular coverage on 80s movies podcasts. I don't just stick to indies. I've spent a lot of time talking about the studio movies of the time. I did a 5-episode arc on specifically a British film producer, David Putnam, who spent less than a year as the head of Columbia Pictures in 1986 and 1987, and all of the movies that he had made during his very short tenure at the studio, and how basically he was the very last true movie mogul, because now Hollywood is run by MBAs and are just small cogs and bank conglomerates that need to constantly churn out mega sequels in order to keep the stockholders happy. It's just an interesting way of looking at how cinema has changed over even the last 30 to 40 years.
Don't let his attitude, you know, shock everybody listening. The sun is shining in. He's a bright face in California love right now. I see the sun hitting your face, Edward.
Yeah, I've got a little bit of a sunbeam right there.
Speaking of jerks, though, everybody check out his Film Jerk Podcast. But speaking of jerks, I'm going to share a conversation I had with Tanner Campbell today. Ed, have you got a chance to check out Tanner and his podcast, Podcasting Sucks? He also has a newsletter.
Yes, I have. Actually, I did listen to one episode while I was driving a couple days ago to prepare for this, and I ended up listening to multiple episodes, even though I was driving and I'm listening to it through in my car stereo through my phone. I just had to keep finding a good place to slow down enough to go to the next episode or find a different episode. And if my wife ever hears this, I'll be in very big trouble. But I just found his way of speaking, the way he presented information, to be absolutely mesmerizing. He's got a way of speaking that even makes me jealous. He's fantastic.
He is fantastic. He's been in the podcasting for a long time and really has a lot of good information and advice. Sometimes And he actually brings this up in this conversation. He can be considered a little bit of a villain in the podcast world because he is such a, how should I put it, Edward, a straight shooter?
Yep. I like straight shooters.
Yeah, I think that he is a very opinionated guy, but that's what makes him entertaining. Whether you agree always or not, it is interesting. I think they will enjoy it. So let me cut the crap and jump right into it. But before we do that, I'm going to take care of a few things. Woo, 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 you know it. This podcast would not exist without the awesome engagement I get from the community. If you're not in contact with me, I highly encourage you to reach out to me on Twitter at @podcast_father or hit me up under the contact section on my website, podcastfather.com. If you really like what I'm doing, you can buy me a coffee or leave me a review on Apple Podcast or your favorite podcast listening platform. This podcast and myself are proud members of Quite the Thing Media. This network is awesome. It has podcasts that speak to you. Great network full of independent content creators. Go on site and check them out. QuiteTheThingMedia.com. All the music used on this podcast, I credit to the artist Young Karts. Go to the site and listen to the music. YoungKartBeats.com. The sponsors of this podcast are amazing. I highly encourage you to show them love just like you do me. Pod page. You can build a beautiful podcast website in 5 minutes. Automatically create a beautiful, listener-friendly podcast website from your RSS feed. Customize the design, get a professional look going. You'll be proud of all your work in just a few clicks. Make it easy and simple. Make sure you go online and create your podcast website, podpage.com. Flex Uptime. If you are a true crime, paranormal, scary, or comedy podcaster looking to find new listeners, consider submitting an episode to Indie Drop-In. Get more listeners, get more exposure. Submit an episode. Go online to indiedropin.com/creators. Oh, hell yeah, Riverside FM is great. Your online recording studio. The easiest way to record studio, quality podcasts, and video interviews from anywhere. If you're a podcaster or content creator, you must go to riverside.fm right now to get started. That's enough of the business. Now it's time to jump into this awesome conversation, which is powered by riverside.fm. The countdown is over, and I'm excited to talk to Tanner Campbell today. He is the maverick of the podcasting world. The John McCain, may you have it. What's going on, Tanner?
The John McCain. I don't know if that's ever been said. I'll take it. He's a nice fella.
He loved to use the word maverick, too. You're involved in a lot of so many different things and have a lot of knowledge in podcasting, and you share that. So this interview is going to be full of great information. But before we get too far into it, I'll give you a second to talk about yourself and all the things you're involved in.
Sure, man. I started podcasting in 2010 as like kind of a, this is new and interesting and neat. And I was in IT at the time. And so I thought, I'm nerdy enough to be able to do this. And maybe I can be kind of creative because I'm not artistic otherwise. And I took to it for a couple months. And then I took a trip to Haiti post-earthquake to do some relief work. And when I came back from that, I kind of just lost focus on podcasting until I moved to Denver, Colorado by myself ahead of my girlfriend and was completely bored and had nothing to do. And so I started a podcast out there within the atheism and theistic space. So it was a lot of conversations about belief, the lack thereof, why you have it, why you don't have it. And that podcast did really well. Ricky Gervais picked it up, retweeted it, got a lot of attention, got a lot of following. And from there, it was just podcast after podcast, podcast business after podcast business, and really learning through doing. There was a lot of in the trenches failure for years before I was in a position to be able to realize that I could help people figure things out because I had failed so much and I didn't want people to fail as much as I did to be able to do this thing that they really cared about. And so these days, as of 2015, I've been, you know, like a hired gun in a lot of ways, either as an editor and engineer, as a studio owner. I owned a studio in Maine. I own one now currently in Colorado. And I do everything from audiobooks to consulting with audio-based businesses to helping podcasters who are either in the indie space or in the corporate space create better, market better, and just be better as podcasters as best I can.
You've got a newsletter that I love and a podcast currently going on. Podcasting Sucks. Walk me through how the title came about and then, you know, explain to us how and what the details of that podcast are, because it's an informational piece for sure.
I think it was my friend Brandon Ushio. He owns Ushio Labs and does a live event once a year out in Utah. It's called Podcast West. And he one day said, you should start a podcast called Podcast Sucks. And I thought, nah. And then a couple months later, I thought, podcasting does suck. It does. Like, it's perfectly on brand for me because I am a little aggressive in the way I talk about the things that I talk about. I'm almost like the Bill Burr of podcasting, which you could take positively or negatively, depending on how you feel about Bill Burr. I just like real talk. I like to speak honestly to people. And I think that people appreciate being spoken honest to about the things they're going through. And within the podcast talking headspace, I don't know that it's intentional. In fact, I would say that it's definitely not intentional, but a lot of it can feel very condescending and high-minded and a little elitist. And so I feel like a voice that says, look, podcasting sucks. You know it sucks. I know it sucks, but we love it and we want to do it anyway. So let's figure out how we can make it suck less. The name is catchy, but I think it also conveys like how a lot of us feel about podcasting is like, why the f*** am I doing this thing I hate so much but also love? How do I get better at it? I don't want to quit. There's a lot of negative energy, I guess, in podcasting that we have to deal with as creators. And it's nice to be able to talk honestly about it. That's why I thought that name was a good name.
In the podcasting space, it kind of really does seem to be like we're trying to establish a social class. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if people publicly say that very much. I'm one that has. I'm not a fan of it necessarily. I don't think it's necessary per se, but I'm glad that somebody else mentioned that, because I do see that too. And I think what your podcast does is it acknowledges that. And I guess you're like what I would say, like a straight shooter.
I appreciate that a lot. I try to be. I think that there's a lot of... Were you active on Clubhouse at all when you first got into podcasting, or recently?
No, but I know quite a bit about it, though, just the how it's been used for it, yeah.
Initially, Clubhouse was great because I could host rooms. People could just do open Q&A. I am never better than when someone puts a question directly to me and I have to give them like actionable advice. That's when I feel like I'm at my 100%. I don't like having to wax philosophical about podcasts because I don't know. I have no idea why I'm not comfortable with that. I'm just comfortable with like, oh, you've got a specific question. I would like to give you a specific answer for that. And Clubhouse used to be great for doing that. And then you started to see rooms like grow your podcast to 1 million in 1 year, or grow your podcast to a full-time income in 3 months. And you're like, what? Like, you can't do that shit. And I think that people they're so sensitive because they have been beat down by that kind of marketing for so long. These people who get on stage, to use Clubhouse terminology, or get on the speaker's platform and say they're going to solve your problems and give you answers and give you actionable advice, and they don't f***ing give you anything. And those people, unfortunately, seem to be, probably because they're good at marketing, the most influential people in the space. And it's so often, with me having an IT background, it is so often true that the people who are best at marketing are the people who are worst in a technical capacity. And the people who are really talented in the technical how-to actionable parts of whatever you're talking about don't know how to market themselves very well. And I feel like a little bit of a disruptor to that because I have a tech background, I have a marketing background, I'm good at both. And so I can make a little noise and upset some people. I've definitely upset some people in the time I've been doing this. And I think that is in more service to the common podcaster, the indie podcaster. And I do work with corporate podcasts as well. And so I can walk that walk and talk that talk. But I'm a creator at heart. I want to serve creators at heart. And the way you do that is give people answers, not try to upsell them to a course or something. I have courses, but when somebody asks me for help, like, I don't give them half the answer and then tell them the other half of the answer is in a $3,500 course they'll have to invest in if they really believe in themselves, which I fucking hate that line.
Oh, me too, man. There's been like a big increase, especially on social media, Twitter, to go more directly, of how-to podcasts, podcast guru. And I'm not even talking podcast industry people, right? I'm just talking accounts I'm seeing everywhere out of the last couple months, especially, that are popping up. Then you've also come along on Twitter during this time period. It's been a sigh of relief as a real genuine care, but yet a really honest approach to everything, like I just previously said. So it's been a good thing discovering somebody like you, because there's just so much noise in the podcasting social media world, and it's really hard to filter out all that noise and focus on what's valuable. And I think that's really hard for people that are new to podcasting. A lot of them ask me about, like, hey, who's this person? Who's that person? Everybody's just trying to figure out who they can listen to and trust. Sometimes we make it way more complicated than it really is. And I think that's what tends to piss me off. This isn't like a really complex thing, in my opinion. There's definitely things you can do for marketing, technical and all that, but it's just, like, I'll say it again, there's just so much noise. I can see why it's difficult for somebody new to kind of find their way through it all, who they can actually talk to.
Well, and that goes to what I was saying about those of us who are talented technically are not generally great marketers, because if you Google how to start a podcast or what's the best podcast microphone, who do you find at the end of those search queries in Google? You probably won't find me. You won't find you. You'll find somebody who's built some, you know, $100,000, multi-million-dollar course business or has a vested interest in selling particular answers to particular questions. It's one of the reasons that I don't use affiliate links in anything I do. And I have marketers who tell me, you should use affiliate links. And I'm like, I understand I could, but there's something that when there's a financial element to the advice I give, I feel that it sullies the advice. Even if people trust me, even if people like me, I just can't get my head around doing that, because it's impossible to say, yeah, these people might give me money when you buy their microphone, but I'm authentically recommending their microphone. Now, if I said that, I'd be telling the truth, but it's harder to believe I'm telling the truth if there's money involved in it.
If there is money involved in it, it's pretty, and I've found out over time, if you are involved in working with somebody, it's important that you really do utilize their service and believe in it. Because your listeners, I mean, the listeners of this podcast are amazing. They will ask me very specific questions about the services, about anything that I've ever talked about. And to not actually use them would be definitely a bit of a very misleading, I guess you could say.
So, good example, I have a sponsor, audiograph.io, and I put out a call to who might want to sponsor me. I reached out to people like Good Pods, Audiograph, and some others, and I said, hey, I want to run an experiment. I think my audience is worth $1.50 per person in my audience. And at the time, I think I had 50-ish listeners. So that would be X amount of dollars. Who would want to sponsor me for this amount of money to see if this works? And I only reached out to people who I honestly was interested in working with, not just anyone who'd throw $75 at me was the amount. And Audiograph reached out to me. They said yes. And I said, great, I use your product and I actually think it's going somewhere. It's in beta. It's a little rough and clunky right now, but still, I think you're going somewhere. And so I talk about Audiograph at the beginning of every episode of my podcast, but I also use Audiograph to promote every episode of my podcast, not because those are like terms and conditions of the sponsorship, but because why the f*** would I not use the thing I'm telling other people to use? And I do see a lot of that. People saying, you know, go get the Shure MV7. Great microphone, but they use something different than a Shure MV7. Well, how come? And how come you're not sponsoring that microphone? Because they wouldn't get you any money for doing that? So are you saying that you're going to suggest that microphone because that microphone manufacturer said they'd give you money, but you won't recommend the mic you use just because they won't give you money? There's something f***ed up about that. I use an Electro Voice RE20, and I wouldn't accept money from Shure to recommend the MV7 without switching to the MV7. Like, it just doesn't make sense. There's so much of that, and it feels very hypocritical.
Do you ever think of that, of some of the larger, more established podcasts that you listen to?
Yeah, I won't name names, but yes, I do. I wonder when I hear some of those, you know, the mid-rolls or the pre or whatever it is, I'm like, do you use that product? You know, do you own any MeUndies? Do you use stamps.com? I don't think you do.
I have owned some MeUndies myself.
They're good underwear. I mean,
they're good underwear. Maybe not the greatest underwear in the world, but they're damn fine underwear for sure.
Hey, listener, are you a podcaster or content creator? Well, you've got to hear this. I'm going to talk to you about Riverside.fm. I use Riverside to record all my interviews for this podcast. I absolutely love it. Super simple to use, and I get the audio quality of an actual recording studio. You can have video resolution up to 4K, uncompressed, crystal clear audio, and continuous file uploading throughout your recording. I've used a lot of different things to record this podcast, and I'll be honest with you, some of them were just way more complicated than they needed to be. That will not be an issue with Riverside FM. It is super simple, and with that, you still have the quality audio, which is very critical. The support team is great and always available to assist you with any questions that you may have. Damn it, I'm serious when I say this. Riverside FM is the ultimate great recording solution for podcasters and content creators. Go online right now and check it out. You can do a free trial and give it a shot. I guarantee afterwards you will be so happy with it. You'll be looking through all the different packages and you will find one that meets your needs. Legitimize the content you are recording and creating. Go to riverside.fm right now to get started.
Let's talk about Twitter some more, because we were talking about before you get on here. I've been on it under this account for 6 months before. Had previous accounts with even more followers, but this time around has gone extremely well. You jumped on your Twitter account a few months ago, and you've, especially in the last month since I've met you, it seems like you've connected with a bunch of people.
Well, you've been part of that. Your hashtag community indie podcast has been super helpful. Of course, I feature somebody from your community once a week on my daily show, and they've just been really receptive. Good Pods has also been a big part of it. Ever since signing up with Good Pods, I've charted in like the top 10 in multiple categories. I'm currently battling it out with the Drunken Theory podcast, and that community has been super helpful as well. And when I first got on Twitter, I said something about someone, and I can't remember what the tweet was about, but somebody from, and I remember exactly who this was, but I'm not going to throw them under the bus, because if they hear this, they'll know it's them, and that's all that's important to me. They said, why would you listen to a guy that has less than 100 followers? And that was like my second week or something on the platform, and I'm like, I tweeted them, and I said, you know how stupid that is, right? To say something like that, to say that the value of someone's position on something comes down to how popular they are. And that person said that I was right and they apologized. And then about 15 minutes later, they deleted the tweet where they recognized it and apologized. And I kept that in my head. And I will retweet every 100 more people that follow me. I retweet a tweet that says something like, it's got a funny gif of Wolverine punching Cyclops in the stomach.
I saw it.
And like that is going to be my motivation for so many years to come. Every time I increase my followership by 100, I'm just going to retweet that because I know that guy will see it. And it makes me feel so good. It makes me feel so good to know that I'm at like 600 some odd followers now, up over 2 months. And that one day I'll be at 8,000 or 20,000. And I'm just going to keep retweeting that every 100. That is the elitism that you were talking about. How fucking stupid is that? Who cares how many people follow you? Are you right or are you wrong?
It's also not a very smart assumption to make that your follower count's going to dictate your downloads.
Why would it?
I have friends on there with just a few hundred, and they've got 50K at least and ongoing. Then there's podcasters I see on there. All they do are retweet each other and do these follow games with each other, which they're having fun. I get it. They've got over 10,000 just by doing that. But speaking with them, they have issues getting people listening to their podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
It's
all vanity metrics.
Yeah. What do you want to focus on? There's a couple different ways to get followers doing that. Or there's the actual, there's engagement piece. It will naturally happen, sometimes in larger numbers, sometimes in smaller. But for you, I know when I first started communicating with you, I listened to your stuff. I checked it out. I liked it. And all I had to do was communicate that. And people were very accepting of it. And they embraced you. And so there is a lot of elitism, but there's also a good side to the podcasting community for sure.
The creator side. That is where the elitism does not exist. That is why I care about creators and not. I had somebody who, again, I will not name, once asked the question publicly and tagged me, like, what does Tanner Helps even really do? How does he really help the industry? And I remember thinking to myself, motherfucker, I'm not here to help the industry. The industry's not my shit. My shit is the creators. That's why I'm here. Now, of course, I was more polite than that, and that person might hear this and know that I'm talking about them, and I have a lot of respect for that individual because I think they're incredibly bright at what they do. But that was an example of, well, you're just getting this wrong. Maybe you as a podcast hosting provider or you as a platform provider, you're showing up for someone, but I'm not showing up for that same person. I'm showing up for the person who's getting behind the mic every day after their fucking 40-hour-a-week job, and I'm so sorry if I can't curse on this show.
Hey, good. Curse away, man. It's fun.
Okay, good. I'm showing up for a different group of people, and you're showing up to podcast every night, once a week, whatever it is. You're working a 40-hour-a-week job. You're doing this because you think you can be successful at it, and you got motherfuckers out there who are, they're giving the most banal advice, the worst advice, the most superficial advice, and it seems like for the creator, there is just such a pathetically sad amount of good advice to find out there. And I'm trying to be one of those people that, you know, I was there. My first podcast was hard. And my favorite podcast that I did was called Legends Missing Whiskey. I did it in 2015 to 2018. And I remember being so frustrated at the fact that I had a lot of listeners. Like, I think my average episode had like 5,000 downloads within the first week for each episode. And I couldn't get 0.7% of that audience to become a Patreon supporter. And I know what that feels like. You're like, people love me. They're saying all these great things. They're leaving great reviews. How come I can't make a living in this? I'm trying to be there for people who are going through the same kind of shit that I went through. And those people are the creators, not the industry.
When you're just getting into it, you don't really see the difference either. And I'll give you an example. A lot of people that are new will try to follow or converse with somebody in the industry. And they'll say, Jeff, I can't, they won't talk back to me, they won't engage back or whatever. They feel so like there's a big gap. And it's just like you said, it's not necessary. But all you can try to do is continue to communicate, to focus on the content. And, you know, everything else will fall into place if it's meant to be. But there definitely is a frustration there. But ultimately, everybody's on the same team, right? I mean, there shouldn't be some.
There shouldn't be, but there is. You get the industry trying to sell solutions. So I have this beef with the podcast hosting industry in particular. I talk about RSS a lot, and I talk about how RSS is actually highly problematic for any podcaster who is trying to make a living. Not a podcaster who's creating strictly from an artistic standpoint, but if you're a podcaster and you're trying to find a niche audience, you're trying to grow to be a full-time business for yourself, maybe you want to make $50,000, $100,000 a year through your podcast, you know, make money through your creative output. RSS creates this landscape where everybody is everywhere. So I had a conversation with months ago that went something like, thought that podcasting didn't have a discoverability problem. And my eyes almost went cross when I heard that. I'm like, well, how can you possibly say that podcasting doesn't have a discoverability problem? It's our biggest problem.
It's audio's biggest problem.
Yeah, it's a huge problem. One of the reasons it's a problem is because podcasts can be listened to anywhere. They're delivered in a way that is decentralized, which means if you're Spotify, for example, you have users who log in. You can collect a lot of data about those users, a lot of behavioral data about those users. And so you could, if you wanted to, create a discovery engine which matched the behavior of your users with the content of podcasters. That's algorithmic-driven discovery. That would be hugely beneficial to us. But we can't do that in a decentralized landscape because you couldn't build that engine in a way that touched every platform where people might be listening. And so podcasting necessarily is going towards a closed system. And these elite individuals who tend to be people who've been in the space since the beginning, 2004, 2005, 2006, they look at that as a threat to what they see as the last bastion of freedom of speech. Like, that's how a lot of them look at podcasting. And I don't necessarily disagree with that, but it's kind of not the point. So many people are getting into this creative space and running up against a wall when they try to monetize it. Now, if you don't want to monetize, this is 100% not your problem. If you don't care about growing your audience, this isn't your problem. But there are 4.3 million people in the podcast index. If you imagine two populations of people who just create content and market it organically, or populations of people who create content and market it with paid ads or market it with strategy and data that they collect from people who listen through closed platforms, who is going to be financially successful? Who's most likely to be financially successful out of those two populations? Obviously, the one that has data on their listeners, can target those listeners based on that data, and can get things that they want, that not what the creator wants, but what the listener wants. Wouldn't it be great if you had a true crime podcast and you knew that the people you were showing your show to actually cared about true crime? Whereas now, let's say you advertise on Overcast, you can market to the specific category, right? You can say, I want to run an ad and reach people who are interested in social true crime. But what if your podcast focuses on true crime of a specific variety, and that true crime of a specific variety is preferred by a specific gender, a specific age group, maybe specifically parents? You can't do that right now. So like the way you can market podcasts right now, because it's decentralized, is incredibly limited. And that is having a huge impact on any podcaster's ability to not just make money, but grow. It's why podcasts have, on average, 100 subscribers or less. That's crazy that 50% of podcasters have 100 subscribers or less. That's nuts. How is anybody going to ever feel good about themselves as creators if they can't get 1,000, if they can't grow to 10,000, if they can't grow to whatever it is that they want to grow to? And the only way you can do that in the noisy environment that we live in now is be able to target those people specifically. And you cannot do that in a decentralized landscape. And these old school podcasters or these podcast elitists who own these companies and work for the industry, not all of them, but most of them, if we move away from a decentralized landscape, podcast hosting providers die. Why would they tell you that it was better to go to a closed platform? They'd lose their fucking business if they did that. There's a lot mixed up in it that I think a lot of people don't think about, and that unfortunately has a negative impact on creators who are trying to take this seriously. If you're a hobbyist and you're just doing it for fun, well, you probably don't listen to this podcast and you probably don't care anyway. Now, who cares if I make any money? Who cares if I have 10 subscribers? And that's cool if you feel that way. But a lot of us are out here like trying to have impact, which could be a substitute for making money, right? I might want to make money on my podcast. Maybe that's my goal. But even if my goal was to have impact or implement social change or leave a footprint, leave my mark, that is strategically the same as making money because you need the same tools to achieve it.
Making an impact and can lead to growth and then possible financial gain. Let me ask you about, you talked about Clubhouse.
Mm-hmm.
Twitter Spaces is starting to really be utilized for audio files for podcasting. I've been in a couple different Twitter Spaces with you. How do you feel about that?
I think that if your podcast is content marketing, which I have no problem with, in fact, to some extent, you could say that my podcast is content marketing, right? I'm a consultant. I work with corporations. There's a good chance that somebody who runs a corporate podcast or has a business who wants to start a podcast could hear my podcast and want to hire me as a result. I'm not shitting on podcasts as content marketing. If you are a podcast for content marketing, it's probably okay because people are really showing up for a very different reason than they show up to most podcasts. Most people, it's my experience that when people show up for podcasting and they're in like our world, our genres of podcasts, they're showing up for some kind of entertainment or escapism. And I think if you're that kind of podcast, using hyper-compressed 64 kilobit per second, really small, nasty-sounding audio files has a very negative impact on your enjoyability of the listener's enjoyability of the content. Plus, think about this. When we talk about, when we see Nielsen or Edison publish these results every year in the Infinite Dial, for example, it'll talk about what percentage of Americans listen to podcasts. And it's gotten higher. I think it's 52% as of the most recent one. It's something very close to that. It's more than half. And that's a big deal. But those people don't listen weekly. They listen at a minimum once a month. I think that's what the metric is. But which podcast do you imagine that 52% of Americans are listening to? Do you think it's yours or mine? It's the top 200. And if you look at the top 200 podcasts, those aren't ours. That's fucking Marvel and NPR and Wondery and Q Code. And these guys are creating shit at a level that we could only dream to be able to create as independents. So do you think that with your true crime podcast, and I'm not taking a swipe at true crime at all, I'm just using it as it's the second most popular or maybe the first next to comedy genre that's out there. So I'm using it as an example. Do you think that someone's going to, if they're most likely to be listening to those top 200 podcasts as being like the anchor show that they don't miss any given week, do you think they're going to listen to something that Marvel produces and then they're going to hear your podcast that's recorded on your phone in your basement that sounds like shit? Do you think they're going to hear that and be as committed to listening to that as they are to listening to those people who are probably most of the podcasts they listen to? Like, if you turn off the indie filter on Good Pods, and even if you don't, there are a number of elite-level podcast shows in there, like New York Times and NPR. The only reason that those charts don't match the charts for Apple is because I would guess, I don't know this, but I would guess that most of the users of Good Pods are podcasters themselves. I would say a good number of that user base are podcasters. And the other ones are specifically coming onto Good Pods to avoid only finding those shows. So it's a very select breed. There's a reason that our shows, your show and my show, rank in the top 10 or top 100 shows on Good Pods and don't do that on the regular charts. Like, my podcast is in the top 10 in my category. I think it's number one in my category on Good Pods. However, my podcast in the real world, if we can think of it that way, is like number 250 or 300. Nobody's ever going to find it, right?
Yeah. The odds are very low. You're right. I'm going to take a minute here to tell you about a fine sponsor of this podcast, Indie Drop-In. If you're a true crime, paranormal, scary, or comedy podcaster looking to find new listeners, consider submitting an episode to be featured on Indie Drop-In shows. If your episode meets some minimum requirements, Indie Drop-In will play your episode to real listeners. The best part is, the listeners like your show. Indie Drop-In provides easy links for them to subscribe. It's 100% free. You get to drop your feed into a established feed that already has actual, real listeners. This is great, guys. This is an amazing way to grow your audience. These listeners are already there. They listen to your episode on Indie Drop-In feed. They will go over and find your podcast and become a subscriber and love it. Greg, the creator of Indie Drop-In, just absolutely loves being involved in the independent podcast community. He is a great podcast mind. Make sure you give him a follow on Twitter at Indie Drop-In. But more importantly, go to indiedropin.com/creators. Get the submission going and submit an episode of your podcast into the Indie Drop-In feed. Hurry now. Get to it.
And word of mouth, that's another thing that I think that might be why people initially got mad at me is I went to Podcast Movement and the guy put up on his presentation the things that people tell you are important to growing your audience. And it was like consistency, good content, paid ads, social involvement. And then the next slide put red X's through all of those items and said the number one way to grow a podcast, word of mouth. And I almost fell out of my fucking chair. I was like, what are you talking about? Imagine you're a marketing guy, so you get conversion rates. So somebody's listening to your podcast, which is already, first they have to find it, but let's say they're listening to it and there's 100 people listening to it. Well, there are two steps in this conversion of word of mouth, which makes it so fucking impossible, so very unlikely anyway. And that's first, that they decide to talk about it when you ask them to. That's conversion number one. Right? What are common conversions? 1-3%. So you've got three people who have said, okay, I'll talk about your podcast. I'll tell my buddy. The second step, the second conversion is they tell their buddy and their buddy then has to decide whether or not to fucking listen. And if that conversion is also 1-3%, you're getting jack shit from your fucking less than 100 audience. It makes me nuts that people say shit like that. I'm like, are you a practitioner? Do you have a fucking podcast? And I went and looked at this guy's like YouTube channel. He was talking about YouTube. And his like all of his videos on YouTube have like 7 views and they've been up for like a year. I'm like, who the f*** are you giving this advice to people, man? Like, what are you doing? People are listening to you. You are important in this space. And so people are going to ascribe, going back to what we talked about, that 100 listeners or less. Why listen to this guy? Well, people are going to assume they need to listen to you because of your position or your popularity or your followers. And if you don't take that responsibility seriously, man, that creates a whole problem for everybody, top down and bottom up.
I myself, I think we all get a little guilty of dropping the word of mouth thing. And I also think it's also like a slippery slope because everybody has a different definition of what it is too. So I think it's one of those things where like, what is word of mouth, right? Like if I'm tweeting it, is that word of mouth? Mm-hmm. If I'm talking to you face to face, is that word of mouth? Well, yeah, but is what I'm doing right now with you word of mouth?
Yes. It's organic. It's non-paid organic, I think, is if you're not paying for it, I think everyone considers that to be word of mouth. And then they'll divvy it up underneath the banner of organic. But I'm also, and you know this, like I'm very pro, you got to do organic. You got to show up. You got to talk. You got to tweet. You got to clubhouse. Whatever your pick your poison, don't try to be everywhere. Pick the one where you're, you know, most easily gravitate towards. But you have to throw paid on top of that. Because again, going back to those two populations, if you're just tweeting, you're competing against... I can't remember when I saw this. It was probably a few years ago, so it's probably even worse. But it was something like somebody was complaining about having to pay to play on Facebook. Why do I have to boost my post if someone is already following my page? And at the time, it was something like the average time spent on Facebook by most people is something like 2 hours a day. And they spend it in increments, right? It's not all at once. And their average number of friends are 300. And the average number of pages they follow are like 900. And so if they're on their platform for 5 minutes and they're scrolling through their feed and every single one of those nearly 1,000 things that they like or are connected with have posted something that day, what is the likelihood that they will see the thing you posted? And throw into the mix the complications of the algorithms of Facebook trying to figure that out for you. You have to pay to cut through the noise. So you look at population number one and they're creating content, they're creating great content, and they're hashtagging, they're doing everything they can without spending money. That's population number one. Population number two does the same shit. But they say, all right, platform, Facebook, Twitter, whatever it is, I'm going to give you $100 a month to make sure that this content gets in front of people who match this profile that I've built, to match this targeting.
Right.
The person who's going to be the most successful does both of those things. They're not just in population one, they're in population two. And I'm hell bent on trying to get people to understand that. Like, if you want to grow, it's a f-ing noise problem, you guys. You have to understand your niche. You have to be willing to pay to target it. You have to understand that half of the growth, more than half of the growth, is probably going to come from paid. And at some point, that organic is going to overtake paid because half the battle of organic, and again, you're in marketing, so you know this, is the accumulation of a body of work. the more work you've done, the more words you have out there on the internet, so to speak, the more indexable you are, the easier you are to find for relevant terms. But it takes years. Most people are burning out by episode 10 or 7 or something ridiculous, and that's because they're only doing organic, they're not growing, it hasn't been long enough for organic to work. And that can be disheartening, especially if you're somebody with no budget, right? You're like, oh, I gotta spend $100 a month? I can't do that, so I guess I can't be successful. And those are hard conversations for me to have because I feel like, you might not be able to be very successful unless you are a very good marketer. If you're somebody who, like you, for example, I don't know how much money you spend promoting this podcast, but you have a whole armory of knowledge related to marketing because that is your background. You are not the common podcaster. Most of us suck at marketing. We have no concept of organic, paid, Facebook ads, Twitter ads, Google. We don't know how to do any of that stuff. And when these elite, as we've said, people within the industry or well-listened to people in the industry, and maybe even well-meaning, say paid ads is stupid, you just need word of mouth, well, you're telling that to people who maybe don't even understand what you're getting at. Even if you might be right, they're not thinking the same thing you're thinking, and they don't have the skill set you have.
Paid ads are definitely not stupid, but new podcasters can also fall for a lot of different things like we've talked about. And I'll give you an example, and I won't use any names. There's an account out there, community-based, that is promoting the fact that if you pay them, they will tweet out your podcast. How do you want to spend your money, right? Because paid ads aren't bad. Paying to advertise is not bad, but you have to be careful how you're doing it. Because back to your discussion earlier, Twitter follower number, not necessarily relevant, right? So if I've got a podcast about history, for example, I don't necessarily want to pay a podcast Twitter account that only has podcasters that follow it to retweet my stuff. That just doesn't make any sense. But those are things that people fall into. I mean, those are traps that are, I don't know if they're intentionally set for harm, but you don't need to, and you shouldn't have to pay to be a part of a community, right? To engage with a community. But spending money on your podcast, advertising it, it's not a bad idea at all, if you can.
It's probably not set from, you know, a position of wanting to harm. I don't think it's malicious. I think what it is a lack of moral attentiveness, I think, because that individual is probably trying to find a way to monetize themselves.
Yep.
And they think, well, this is a way and this is fair and I do have a large audience and this could help. But they're not thinking, well, okay, maybe your true crime podcast pays me to do whatever it is that we're talking about. But only 1% of people who are aware of this community are interested in true crime. There's no way to falsify that. There's no way to target within an arrangement like that. And it reminds me of, so Instagram, this is actually the latest episode I think I released, well, the day before today, was about Instagram's decision to include a link sticker within stories. But before that, you had to have 10,000 followers or more to get the swipe up feature. You couldn't send people to an external link. And you've probably seen this. There were so many people who were just going, you can go buy likes, you can go buy followers. I mean, you can do that in a second. You can spend $99 and get 10,000 followers. Like, that's the going rate. It's almost nothing. And people will do that to gain features like that, but people will also do it to gain, like, it's a vanity metric, but they'll use it to gain authority, perceived authority. And maybe they think even that they're helping themselves. So let's take, for example, people who would buy 10,000 followers to get that feature before this link sticker became a thing. Okay, great. You've got 10,000 followers. Now you can use the swipe up. Who the f*** those 10,000 people give a shit about what you're trying to promote on your story? You bought them. They're not real.
Yep. Fake accounts. Yeah, yeah.
They're fake. A lot of people get very obsessed about the number, and the number is important, but the qualified nature of the number is more important. It's important to have 10,000 followers. It's probably true. It's better to have 10,000 than it is to have 10. It's better to have 1,000,000 than it is to have 10,000. But it's not better to have 1,000,000 fake followers than it is to have 1,000 genuine followers who engage and actually want to be there.
I agree. Back to my point. It's not a bad idea to spend money on your podcast. It's not also a bad idea to ask somebody for advice either if you have any questions, which is what we tend to see for sure.
And that's good. That's why people like you and I are here. To give advice that hopefully people can trust.
I did call you a maverick earlier.
You did do that. Hopefully I didn't back you into a corner with all the raging I just did about the industry.
And here's the thing. It's hard for a lot of people to understand and see that unless they've been in it for a while. But it's not just podcasting. I've been in radio. It's radio. It's everything like that. There are always those people that are like that. And I don't think when you first get into it, you're aware of them. Or how would you be, you know?
Yeah, how would you know any better?
Yeah.
Oh, 50,000 followers. This person must be knowledgeable, which you can't fault anybody for believing. I mean, if I walked into a room and everybody wore a certain amount of medals to discern, to identify how smart they were or how accomplished they were, I would, of course, want to talk to the person with the most amount of medals because I was new and I didn't know any better. Didn't know you could buy medals.
Yeah. Man, I could talk to you all night, and I do have a few more things I want to ask you. One, what are you looking for in the future for podcasting? What are some things that you could see coming up or some things you'd like to see?
In general, for the creative economy, for podcasters themselves, I really want to see this discoverability issue solved. And that makes me kind of pro closed system and anti, not so much anti, but like willing to see RSS die. However, deep down, I would like to see this solved without going closed system. I just don't see how that's possible. I think that the future pretty shortly, let's say within 5 years, I think we're going to see that the average number of creators who come in fresh and start their first podcast are going to be going to Anchor and Spotify because it's easy and the path of least resistance has a tendency to win. Now, you and I have been in this for a while. We'd scream bloody murder about that. I have a podcast on Anchor, actually, so let me be straightforward about that. I'm testing something. I'm testing their ads platform, so I kind of have to. But guys like us would be like, don't use Anchor. Don't use your phone. That's insane. But path of least resistance, that's what's going to happen. And as soon as more than half of creators become creators who are creating on Anchor, eventually they'll become 70%. Eventually it'll be almost all of them. And podcasting through RSS and this traditional way of doing it that has way more benefits for the capable and the able who understand marketing, who can build their websites, who get analytics, who understand like Google tracking and Facebook advertising. It's way better to have your own website and host in the traditional way. That's way better. But to somebody who doesn't know those things, Spotify's like, hey, guess what we have? You can monetize right away. Hey, guess what else we have? We've got Green Room if you want to do social audio. Hey, guess what else we have? People can pay you money right here to subscribe right on our platform. You don't have to go anywhere else. And one of the things that all new podcasters come to grips with pretty quickly is, holy shit, I need a podcast hosting provider, and I need a website, and I need a Patreon, and maybe I need a Supercast for something different, and now I have to create extra content just for that community. And it's like, what? How am I going to do all this shit? And Spotify is making it so you do all that shit in one place, and they're able to build a discovery engine, and they're able to give you access to an ads platform, and I think they're pretty soon going to release a tracking pixel to make that ads platform even more powerful. So I look at a platform like that, and I'm like, that solves a lot of problems, or at least makes solving those problems a lot easier. So do I want to see that happen? No. I would rather see RSS stay free and open, because I think it's better for creators who, you know, you want to get in, and you don't want the cost of getting in, or you don't want there to be any big barriers to getting in. That's better for creators. But I also want to see creators be successful. And I'm looking at, I think Spotify is going to win. I don't want to see it. But ultimately, I think it will create a world where more podcasters can be more successful more easily, depending on their definition of success. Other things I'd like to see.
Real quick, though, they're creating like a closed loop system. But those at the top and fully reaping all the benefits of the closed loop system, a lot of them tend to be celebrities. I mean, it's not like your point is great. Like they're promoting a breeding ground for podcasters, right? This is a creator-centric environment. But however, there's still a lot of the studio or celebrity effect of it, even with an anchor. When you're on the app and you look at it, that's still the mainstream part of the app.
100%. However, all they have to do to mitigate that truth, because what you're getting at here is you'll fail just as much on Anchor as you'll fail not on Anchor, right? Like that's the point. The people who are going to get all the attention and make all the money are going to be the celebrities.
Not all. No. But just often. As likely. That's my point.
Yeah. However, all that Spotify has to do to mitigate that is price their ads at a 4 cent higher cost per individual. Instead of a 2 cent cost per individual, I think that's roughly what it works out to. Is common CPM for podcast ads is $25 or something thereabouts. And so if you divide 1,000 by 25 or however you do that math, you get something that's like 2 cents per listener. That means that if you're a podcaster with 1,000 listeners in the regular world of RSS driven podcasting, you can make $25 per ad. We're kind of flopping some details here, but if that value per listener was 4 cents instead of 2 cents, you would be more successful on Spotify. That's all they would have to do. And then all of a sudden, for the same amount of listeners, you're making twice the amount of money. And that, even if you're not making a lot of money, even if it's only one CPM, you're still making twice as much as you would if you were on RSS. And I think they have the ability to make that happen.
I cut you off. You're going to go into something else. No, you'd like to see.
Other things I'd like to see happen is I'd like to see more leaders in the space who didn't feel like this old guard. Because I think the old guard comes at it from a just intellectually a different way, purpose a different way. I don't think that most people who create podcasts are like thinking of podcasts as the last bastion of free speech. I don't think that's how most creators come to any creative platform. I think they're like,
right,
I like a thing and I want to be creative. And I think that we need more people who are aware of that within like the, what do we want to call it? The leadership suite of podcasting. I don't know. People who get that what they're trying to do isn't like defend some deeply held philosophical belief, but instead are just like trying to bring their art to the world. I'd like to see more people like that in leadership positions within the industry. And there are some, but there aren't enough, I think. Those would be the two things I'd like to see.
You know, for me, being a radio person back in the day, it kind of was like a cool escape away for like your version of radio. But as time goes by, just with anything else in life, new generation, new everything, they just don't give a shit about that. They're not even aware of it.
Right. They don't
care. So you got it in your mind. You have to adapt to that as well. Because like I always say on this podcast, I feel like at this point in my time, I'm trying to give back to the community. And I think those people have to realize what that truly means. It's different for everybody else, but realize what's truly going to be helpful.
What the new community wants, yeah, as opposed to what you might have wanted when you were just upcoming in the community. Yeah, I think that's exactly what it is. And I don't necessarily not think that podcasting is an important tool of free speech, but I can't allow myself, if my job is to serve creators, I can't allow myself to get emotional about that. I'm here to help people be successful. And so if that's not what they want and not what they care about, then that's not what I show up trying to help with.
I think at the end of the day, it's a lot for a lot of people. It's just about having a conversation with their friend.
100%.
And I'm glad I've got to meet you and get to know you and have this conversation today, man. It's been awesome.
Thanks, man. Yeah, I hope I didn't make you run over.
Yeah. No. We're good. I could talk all night, but I respect your time, and everybody listening realize he's in a multi-million dollar recording studio that I see behind him.
It's just it's a very hot box. Actually, you might want to edit out the fact that I just said hot box, but have you been watching the, I think it's Netflix or Hulu. They've done a podcast with, or not a podcast, a show about podcasting with Steve Martin and Martin Short.
I haven't seen it. I saw that. I haven't watched it yet. Is it good?
Yeah, it's pretty good. I always love Steve Martin and Martin Short together. They're kind of like a Jack Lemmon and Walter Matthau couple. It's great to see them on screen together. They have great chemistry. And this show is no exception. But there's a scene in it where there are a lot of podcaster insider jokes that I think they did very well. Like in one scene, they are recording of an episode of their podcast. And within the dialogue, as like a side statement, Steve Martin says something like, "It's so hot in here." And I just start laughing because I'm like, how many of us sweat in small spaces for the sake of good sound? I just thought it was a really good joke. So if you haven't checked it out, definitely check it out. It's worth it. It's funny.
Reminds me of having to record in my vehicle when my office is being rented.
With the windows up, somebody drives by, you're like, I got to retake that whole line now.
Yeah, train. Seriously though, man, thanks for taking the time to have this chat. And more importantly, I'm glad that you've got to be, and you already were in the community, but you've got to meet more people in the independent podcaster community lately. It's been really cool to see them take to you, their interaction with you, not only on Twitter, but something like I've been a big part of Good Pods, those resources and things. It's been awesome to see people get to meet somebody like you and be able to use somebody like you as a resource.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that a lot. Hopefully we'll get our Good Pods badge soon, Indie certified.
I know. We got to keep pushing them on that. Yep. Hey, thanks again, man. We'll have to do this again soon.
Thanks, brother. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for listening, and thanks for telling a friend. But more importantly, thank you for supporting independent content creators. I hope you enjoyed this episode and continue to listen to the upcoming ones. I'm really trying to do something special here by highlighting all the amazing things all these amazing content creators are doing. I hope you continue to join me on my journey. I'm Jeff, aka Podcast Father, the Indie Podcaster. Keep being you. Keep being great.